Hey, everybody. Welcome to LSAT Demon Daily. I'm Beth, and today I am joined by Ala. We're both teachers at LSAT Demon, which you can find at lsatdemon.com. Today, we want to do something kind of fun, a little bit different than we've had on the podcast before, at least that I can remember. And we want to start talking to you guys about what we're reading. We get this question a lot about book recommendations, and we thought we could talk to you all about what we're reading outside of the LSAT, because obviously we spend some time doing LSAT by teaching it still, and we love this test, but we also do a decent amount of reading on our own time, both fiction and nonfiction. And we think that reading can help you with the LSAT, not to totally replace any of your LSAT studying, to be very clear about that. But we just think it could help you in many ways that reading can help you just in your day-to-day life as well. And we think there are some ways that we want to connect it to the test a little bit, maybe connect it to your future legal career, and tell you about how it has helped us in our own personal lives. But before we do that, I'll just tell you a quick little overview of how Ala and I met. Ala and I met
our origin story, if you will.
Yeah, exactly. We met in a Demon Live class. I am so glad and so grateful for the day that Ala was brave enough to DM me in a class and be like, "Do you want to be study buddies?" After we had spoken up and said some like related things to a question. And that was our origin story of how we started studying together. So we studied for the LSAT together for what, Ala, like six months?
Yeah, maybe it was like a total of 8 months. Yeah.
And so what it looked like, we were getting on FaceTime almost every weekday doing a section, and we would argue about answer choices and help each other learn, really. So we got to know each other really well through that, sort of built a community. We did it with one other woman as well. And we found community in a test that was hard, and it was really, really beneficial in a way I didn't know I needed, but to have somebody in my corner doing the same thing. I don't know if you feel that way too, Ala, but
I totally feel that way. I'm so grateful for Beth. I feel like Beth absolutely changed my life, and it was so much easier to get up in the morning and do a section if I knew that I was going to spend time with Beth. And it was just so easy. And we also studied with a third person in our study buddy group. And we just had the best time because the pressure would be off because we knew that we were going to review effectively because we were going to do it together. And we didn't feel this, like, you know, the imposter syndrome of, am I doing it right? Am I on the right track? And when you've got people in your corner, it's so much easier.
Yeah, totally. And on that too, the level of accountability that it brought of like, if I had a hard day, but I had planned to study with you, it was like, I'm going to do my section. There were days that we also took off, to be clear too, but the accountability there was really great. And knowing that we were in it together was really great. So out of that, obviously we have both taken the test, absolutely nailed it. I credit Ala to a ton of that too.
Oh my God.
8 months we spent studying together. And now we teach together at the Demon, which is great. But out of all of that too has come a really organic and natural friendship. And one of the things that we've talked about for a while is what we're reading, and we recommend books to each other. And that is sort of our way and intro of why we want to bring more of you into this conversation as well.
Yeah, we think reading's important for obvious reasons, but we also want to talk about some of the not obvious reasons for why we think reading matters and why we think reading matters specifically for LSAT students and future lawyers. We want to first start by talking about some of the benefits of this. We also want to get into how taking a step back from the LSAT can be a good thing and healthy ways to do that. We want to give you maybe some tips on how to read more. If you're not somebody that likes reading, that's not the end of the world. It's okay. I didn't always like reading, but like, how do you get yourself into that? And then we're going to give you some recommendations too, towards the end of the episode. We'll share what we're reading right now, and you can tell us if you want to hear more. We'll dive right into why we're talking about this. One of the biggest benefits of reading is you will build your lexicon and your vocabulary when you read more. English is not my first language, and I think this is particularly relevant to people for whom English is not their first language. I often make this analogy of like maps in your mind when you are learning words. For someone who grew up speaking English, who had family that spoke English, who had a whole community that spoke English, is going to have more associations with individual words than someone who didn't grow up speaking English. So you are at a disadvantage, and I'm putting it really plainly, you are at a disadvantage when you don't have as many of those webs and maps in your brain for words that are difficult. So your job as somebody that is struggling with English on the LSAT is to make more of those associations. One of the best ways to do that is to read more, is to consume knowledge and opinions and entertainment in English.
Yeah, on that too, we think reading, we're talking about reading is kind of like something that can supplement the other work you're doing on the LSAT. And we were talking about how like weightlifting, maybe you're into weightlifting, maybe not. And
I'm into weightlifting. I love weightlifting.
Yeah. Yeah. I know you are. Yeah. But I'm lightly into weightlifting. I am no pro, but I have learned to start lifting weights this year. And one of the very natural things that has come from it is like my back pain from sitting at work has gone away. And leaning over a keyboard, just because my back has gotten stronger. So we were talking about reading being kind of like that to supplement all of these other things in your life. It might make the lift a little lighter if you're doing a lot of reading. Yeah.
That's awesome. I totally see that parallel.
One other thing that we were thinking about is that lawyers are readers. I'm not a lawyer yet, but many people tell me that lawyers are readers. Lawyers that I know tell me that lawyers are doing a ton of reading. So instead of letting that scare me, I've actually let it be one of the things that's drawn me to the legal profession. Obviously, the reading I'll be doing as an attorney won't be reading fantasy novels. Hopefully, I'll still get to do some of that in my free time. But that actually is one of the things that draws me to the profession. Getting to do a lot of reading. I do a lot of reading in my work now. And it's one of the things I love about it. And thinking about that too, as we're going to be heading to 1L in the future, and I know some of our listeners obviously will be heading to 1L, 2L, 3L, 3L in the future too, we might lose some time in law school to read what we want to read. And hopefully I will personally be wanting to read what we're assigned as well, but I'm sure there'll be things that just come with school that like we have to do this and understand it anyways. But I'm using this time in my next 6 months before law school starts to like read everything that I can that I enjoy before it gets chosen for me.
I'm so glad that you said that, because I'm thinking about this. When I was in high school, the first time I thought about the possibility of becoming a lawyer, and that this was a really long time ago, I went to this, like, you know, they have those like career days where they bring in like professionals to talk to you about like, this is what it's like to be a doctor. This is what it's like to be an engineer, and you're supposed to get an idea as a young adult, like what it means to go into that career. And I remember going, and the only one I went to was the lawyer one, because I was so like, I thought it was so cool. I didn't realize that's what I would end up doing, because I took a step back from it for the longest time. But I remember I was a really cool lawyer, and the only thing he talked about in the entire session was about reading. He was like, that's all lawyers do. Lawyers will pick up like a soup can and read the back of it. That's actually the analogy he gave. He's like, yeah, like if you're, doesn't matter what you're doing, you just want to read. And that's kind of your entire job, is to just read all day long. And at that point in time, given that like English wasn't my first language and I was terrible at school, I was like, yeah, so it looks like becoming a lawyer is not for me, because I hate reading.
Yeah, totally.
But since then, it's like completely changed my outlook, because it is learnable. Like the LSAT is learnable. You can learn to fall in love with reading too.
Yeah. Definitely. I mean, I love that too. And it's probably also like reading the back of a soup can and being able to turn around to somebody and tell them like everything it said in totally different words. And because you're retaining all of that information. And I think about that's happening with a lot of the reading that we're doing on the LSAT, right? We're not just reading a passage in LR or in reading comprehension and going to the questions and totally forgetting what we just read. We're reading it, understanding it, and retaining it, even if it's just a total paraphrase. And that's exactly what I'm doing when I'm reading a novel too. Sometimes I read a really exciting chapter and I'm like, who can I hit up to tell them what just happened in the best chapter I've ever read of my life?
Yeah, and I think it does bring that like excitement and enrichment into your life, right? Because you're essentially giving yourself the opportunity to learn something new, to witness a new perspective, to find some like joy and some newness in what's going on. And it's so hard to do that when you're, I don't know, like rewatching the same show you've seen before, or like similar experiences that you've been having. And it really allows you to consider other things that might be going on that I just don't think you're always going to get the opportunity to do that if you don't give yourself reading to do.
Yeah, I couldn't agree more. Yeah. And I think it's just like we're talking about, like, it's just flexing those muscles. It's just practicing. We talk about that. I mean, that is so analogous to so many things that we talk about on the LSAT. One conversation that reminds me of too is a conversation I have with students about games all the time. And everybody wants to bring their time down on games. I have been there. The thing that did it was practicing, sort of like riding a bike, flexing the same muscle. I think the same is true and can be true of becoming a better reader. Just keep practicing. Maybe it's hard. And we'll talk a little bit more about recommending what to read, because I don't think you're going to pick up the densest book ever, and that's going to be where you can find the joy in reading. But it's about what you choose too. So we'll get to more of that
and
later.
There's freedom in that too, right? We understand that the LSAT is restrictive. You can't just not read what's in front of you. You have to take on the sentence in front of you and be like, I have to understand what's going on here. But you can exercise some free will outside of the LSAT and go read things that you enjoy. And we want you guys to be able to do that, so you find that it's less oppressive to read. Like, we don't want you to see a wall of text and run away from it. And the less that you do that in more enjoyable settings, the easier it is to do it and set it in a setting where you might not be happy with a science passage in front of you. That's okay. But you'll get better at that reaction if you give yourself the opportunity to do it in happier circumstances.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, that's great. And one of the things that I do want to make very clear today too about why we're bringing this up, I think, and we both think, both all and I think, your life right now, if you're studying for the LSAT, that is awesome. And I don't want your life to be all about the LSAT. I want you to give the LSAT your best hour, or maybe your best 2 hours. And that's like max a day.
Yep.
And not even 7 days a week. Like, I was a 4 or 5 day a week studier. And being able to walk away from the test and get my mind on something else was absolutely invaluable.
Yeah, it's almost like you feed yourself by doing other things outside the LSAT in order to nourish your time that you spend on the LSAT. And if you don't find good ways to unwind, you're going to burn out. I definitely think that reading outside the LSAT, particularly things that have nothing to do with the LSAT, nothing to do with becoming a lawyer, doing that can really help you find peace and joy and some sort of contentment, and help you come back refreshed the next day when you take your next section or you're doing some drilling or going to a class.
Yeah. One mistake that I made a couple times while studying was, like, I did an LR section and say I really underperformed based on how I was doing before. And a couple times I then was so mad at myself and at the test that I then just took another LR section back to back.
Yeah.
Didn't even do a great review. I was just kind of pulling the lever on the slot machine of, like, maybe I'll just get better questions and I'm going to just willpower my way out of this and sit here for another time section. And you know what? Every time I did that, I got even worse results and I ended up more angry. I even just want to tell you guys this of, like, I want you to allow yourself to have the break. Do your really solid studying, do your really solid hour, have a solid review, and then walk away and give yourself and your brain the reward it wants by doing something that you enjoy, that makes you feel good. And just remembering to step back, and you are not just this test. It'll help you on the test if you can separate yourself from the test.
Yeah. And we don't ever recommend studying full time. Don't have to quit your job to study for the LSAT. These are all things that they kind of give you a sense of security, like, oh, I'm doing all this work around the LSAT, so I will do well. LR flaw in there somewhere. Basically, the idea that you're giving up all of this time and this energy and all these sacrifices you're making and giving up your happiness in order to work on the test, and it's not going to make you better at the test. It's because this test isn't a test of knowledge exactly. It's a test of performance and proficiency at reading, at understanding, at attacking LR passages. Can you figure out this game? And those questions really are about that 1 hour a day, maximum like 2 hours a day, maybe 5, 6 days a week. That's really all you got to do. So how do you step back? How do you spend your other time? Because we obsess over the LSAT, and we both did it. We were super duper guilty of it when we were students, which was not that long ago. It was like 6, 7 months ago, right? We used to obsess about how we're doing on the test all the time outside the test. And it didn't help us. It didn't help us get more points. It didn't make us less anxious about the test. It didn't help with any of that. So one of the ways we found joy is reading. And that's why we wanted to talk about it today.
Yeah. So just thinking then, what has helped you to read more?
Yeah, that's a really good question, because, you know, we've told you the importance of reading. We've told you that we've found joy in it. And you're like, okay, but how do I get into it? So we've got some like tips that we want to share with you. One of the things that I struggled with, Beth, was like, I didn't know how to add in reading into my life. Like, I'm one of those people that will get obsessed with a book and then I'll just do that and then nothing else. So how'd you like schedule reading into your life? How did you make it a priority?
Yeah, for me, one really important thing, and this has been like a long time battle of will. I am a Zoomer. I was born in 96. So the age of social media came with my coming of age. I have spent time both trying to get off social media completely, which honestly, I kind of experienced that a little bit as like an analogous to starving as a diet, like to cut out food completely, like those really bad diets where you're like, I'm not going to eat a single carb. And when you don't eat a single carb for 2 weeks, you find yourself at 2 o'clock in the morning, like eating a whole loaf of bread. So that didn't work for me per se for the years that I tried to just get off social media completely. But one thing that's been really helpful, just because social media sucked my time. I work at an office job. I sit at a desk. It's really easy for me to just open my phone, and not saying this in a condemning way at all, I have spent plenty of time on TikTok. But what has really helped me in the last like 6 months is getting apps off of my phone. So the total cutting of them, the starvation efforts didn't work for me for a time, because I still have this desire to like see what sort of life updates are going on with people on Instagram or whatever else. Sometimes Twitter is an easier way to check the news for me or receive helpful tidbits of information. But for me, one of the ways that really brought reading as a priority into my life was getting apps off of my phone. So I spend so much less time on Instagram and on Twitter. I did get rid of TikTok completely, but when I want to check that stuff, I go on a browser and I end up checking it like every other week now. But that's enough. That's enough for me to check in on like, what are my loved ones up to? What are the friends who live far away up to? And because of that, I have had a lot of free time to replace. And books has been one of my favorite ways to replace that time that I would have spent scrolling.
That's awesome that you bring that up. Yeah, that's awesome that you bring that up, because I'm thinking about like the distraction aspect of social media and the distraction aspect of like our attention spans these days, right? And one of the things you definitely need on the LSAT is a good attention span and the ability to focus on what's happening in front of you. And one of the tips that I try to give my students is try to just understand what's going on here. One of the best ways, one of the low stakes ways to practice that is to read.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. And just on that and the attention span stuff, it actually makes me think about a couple things that have helped in turn of one, stepping away from social media at least a little bit. how much worked for me, and also what reading has benefited for me. Social media is a really accessible way to numb our emotions and what we're feeling. I don't know if you experience this too, but whenever I experience something hard, it's harder for me to lean into and actually think about what am I feeling. And I think even some of that comes up on the LSAT, especially like I was talking about earlier, like I miss a whole, I do poorly on an LR section. Instead of sitting with that and thinking about a review and thinking about what I'm feeling and maybe thinking about how I can just do a little better tomorrow, I decided to do it again instead. And then afterwards, probably got on my phone and scrolled. And I think getting on social media like that was a way for me to emotionally numb myself and not think about what I'm feeling, not be able to communicate that. And reading has actually really helped me in a lot of ways because of the ways, different ways that authors paint, like either characters in a story or if it's nonfiction and it's very real, like emotions coming out of a book, that I actually do end up naturally emotionally engaging with and empathizing with. It's like one of these ways that it's just helping me be a better processor of my own emotions, a better way to know myself, a better way to know and empathize with other people. Because whether a story is in a book, I'm still learning to empathize with other people. And that helps me in relationships too.
That's a really subtle point. It's almost like you're making room for your failures, successes, whatever it is that's going on in life. You're talking about being able to pause and be like, okay, this is what's happening here. I get an understanding. And even from a meta way, I feel like that's what consuming information in RC is about, right? Like you have to pause and take in what's actually going on. That's, I think, one of the core skills that lawyers do, right? Like Nathan always says, the lawyers have to be the smartest people in the room. And I think reading a fantasy novel is like the easiest way to just get started on that skill and find like real joy in it, so that when there are stakes involved, like your client's life is on the line, like what is that going to look like? And what is interacting with it at that point going to look like?
Totally. Yeah, I couldn't agree more. Exactly. Yeah. What do you think, Ala? What's another way that has, another practice that has helped you to read more?
Audiobooks. I absolutely adore audiobooks. For me, I didn't realize how much I was sort of like policing myself in terms of the way I was consuming books. But I adore podcasts now a lot too, but really audiobooks, because they give me the they take longer to read, right? Because yeah, there's somebody speaking them out. They take longer, but the mimicry that's in some audiobooks is so good. It's almost like the long form version of a TV show that's like enacted, and audiobooks just bring it all to life. And it's such a great way to learn information, to learn a story. And it's a sort of new medium, I think, that I've been enjoying a lot. And it allows me to like fold laundry while I listen to an audiobook. Yeah. The other thing, and this might be kind of niche, is I don't always know how to pronounce words in English because, yeah, you know, English isn't my first language. I wouldn't have necessarily heard how those words are supposed to be pronounced. And when you're reading an audiobook, you don't have to worry about that because they pronounce it for you. And it's really nice to be like, to feel that like, oh, this is how this word is supposed to be pronounced. And one of the recommendations I'm going to give is like filled with all kinds of like crazy words that the author has made up for this culture that exists in this fantasy novel. And I like have switched to the audiobook so I can like hear how the author meant for those words to be like written out. And that has been such a fun exercise.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. And I mean, even related to that too, like characters' names, like knowing how a character's name is supposed to be said, or audiobooks where different characters speak and they actually do have different people recording the audiobooks. They're so like exciting and interactive in a way that even reading on a page isn't exactly the same. Yeah. I've had books that I've read on paper before and I've been like, oh, I kind of want to hear the audiobook because I want to hear it told a different way.
Yeah. What about you? How have you found like ways to bring more reading into your life?
Yeah, one way in particular that I have practiced for a couple years now, and it's been really helpful to me. I used to read like primarily nonfiction, but I started reading more fiction, which has helped a lot with reading more just because I found out more that I was interested in, kind of like you were talking about not discriminating against genres. I don't know what I like yet if I haven't tried it. So that's been great. But in that, I still read a decent amount of nonfiction and fiction. And one thing that really helps me is to read before bed. I love reading before bed because it makes me more tired than like watching a show or something. But I prefer to read fiction before bed, like a novel or something. And part of the reason for that is because nonfiction is often heavier, denser, and I mean, by heavier, I mean like emotionally heavier. So that's not always something that I want to think about right before I start to dream at night. So I have an easier time when I'm awake during the day, able to process heavier information through nonfiction, and saving my novels and more of my fun reading for nighttime, which I do sometimes during the day too. But if I'm reading at night, I tend to favor fiction for that reason.
That's a really good tip. It also like brings me back to the kind of different ways that I think we think about reading as a whole. We try to think about it as like in sections, right? There's this kind of reading and that kind of reading. And that's a helpful delineation for the kind of tip you're talking about, right? Where like I don't necessarily want to read about really horrifying things right before I go to bed. That's a great tip, and that's like helpful to know the genre in order to like pick a book that you're going to read before you go to bed. One of the things I used to do is I used to see reading as this sort of like nerd thing to do. I'm a proud nerd now, but I used to think that like it's only something you do to like learn stuff and to educate yourself, and that it can't be fun. It can't be like something that you just enjoy. And so I used to discriminate by genre. Like I would be somebody that would enjoy certain books, but I wouldn't read them because I would like, oh, those are just fun though. I need to like become a smarter person. I need to become a better person. And that's got to be these books. Like these Pulitzer Prize winning books are the only ones like I'm supposed to read or like spend my time on. And that like used to keep this bar really high. And I would like not read as much because I would think like, unless it meets this bar, I'm not going to pick it up and I'm not going to spend my time on it. And that just made me somebody that was reading like a book a year. And last year, I read way more books because I was like, Ala, why don't you just read stuff that you like, forget about getting something out of it. Not everything has to have a capitalist or like, loaded economical value to it. It could just be, it brings you joy. So now it doesn't matter what the genre is. Sometimes it's fantasy. Sometimes it's like romance. Sometimes it's whatever I like. And not discriminating has really helped me bring a lot more books into my life. And that's made me happier and actually has made room for the more nerdier books because now I have the energy to read this that I've been putting off because the bar has been so high.
Totally. I mean, I couldn't agree more. I have found a couple of genres that I really like just this past year because I've been willing to trust people's recommendations and just to try something new. And speaking of that too, I think this is a pretty commonly known rule, but I do tend to stick to the rule and I find that it works, giving a book at least 50 pages. So if I pick up a book, some books start out really boring and then they get really great. Some books start out really boring to me and they never get better. But I try to stick with a book for at least 50 pages. Sometimes that's hard to do because I read like on an iPad or on my even phone sometimes from the library app. But I try to give it at least like a good quarter. And if nothing has piqued my interest, I walk away from it. And that's been one thing that's been really freeing for me in the past couple of years too, and has helped me read more is putting books down. Because I used to start books and then I wouldn't allow myself to start something else until I finished the book I was reading. So if I hated the book I was reading, guess who wasn't reading for 3 months? It was me because I was like, I can't start that next good book because I have to read this one. This is what smart people do, right? They finish books. And I have totally let that go. I think now, like, knowing myself is better, being able to put a book down, not waste my own time. I don't like it. It doesn't even matter if somebody else liked it. That's great for them. But being able to walk away from a book has helped me read more too. And then 50-ish pages, quarter. Yeah.
Those, I feel like that also is like the other side of the coin of like, don't discriminate by genre. It's like, you don't have to be hard on yourself about finishing something or not finishing something. It's a book. It's okay. It's not going to get hurt.
Right.
Because you're not going to finish reading the book. It's fine.
Yeah.
And you talking about like reading on your phone or in a paperback is also reminding me of like actual resources that have helped me read more. So Goodreads is a great place to like start like collecting books that you've read and mark down books that you want to read. There's stuff in there that I haven't touched in like 5 years, but I know I want to get to them sometime in the future. And it's a nice place to like mark it and keep it there so you don't forget it, but it's not like a pressure. So I love Goodreads. I also really like Libby is a life changer because all you need is a local library subscription. And you get it on your phone and you can borrow books, you can borrow audiobooks, like some really, really good stuff is on there for free. You know, so take advantage of that. I also really like Scribd. It's a relatively cheap subscription to a lot of, you may not find like the very well-known books in there, but there's lots of literature and lots of like scientific stuff even that you can find. And it's a massive database of journals and documents and all kinds of things that you can look at too. And if you're a university student, you have access to tons and tons of free subscriptions, which I only realized after I graduated because I realized I don't have access to them anymore. So all of those are fantastic resources for like places to get started. If you're like, I don't know what to pick up, go to Goodreads, go look at the listicles for like top romance novels, like top fantasy novels. And those are great places to start. And the reviews on there are absolutely hilarious.
Yeah, no, I love to see what other people think of a book. And it's a great compass on like, do these people who have like interests as me, do they like it too? And if they hate it, like maybe I'll choose a different one. One thing about Libby that just reminded me of, I do almost all of my reading on Libby and I do have like 15 books on hold right now. Couple great features about Libby connected to the library. I'm reading a couple books right now. And so every time they try to deliver one of my holds to me, there's also a feature that I can just hit deliver in 10 days or deliver in 14 days or 30 days. And so that'll just come back. I don't lose the book. I don't lose the hold. And I'm also not taking it up while somebody else might want it. One other thing I do to kind of cheat the library system, your library card is connected to your county, right? So I have a Denver County library card. They have different books available if you have a library card from a different county or even a different state. So I may have some connections elsewhere and I might be double dipping. So if you have that sort of access too, like that's a great way to get access to books, especially popular ones that might be checked out at your library.
Yeah. Absolutely. Yeah. Those are all like great resources.
One other thing I'll add about what helps me read more. And I guess just in general, but one thing I've noticed about book recommendations. So this is what's helped me read more. Trusting the recommendations that people give me. And whether that's, you know, friends, family, whatever. People recommend books to me. And one thing that I have personally committed to not doing anymore is commenting on the sort of writing that the author does. So I think I've noticed this a lot with especially like real page turner kind of novels or like beach reads and stuff, which are super fun reads. And I have a really fun time reading like a juicy mystery or like a mom book club read. I really like at times. And one of the things that I've committed to not doing is when I recommend books to people, I no longer say anything like, oh, this is written really poorly, but you know, it was a really quick read. And part of the reason for that is just that there was an author who really kind of poured themselves into this book. If I don't like it that much, I just won't recommend it. And I've noticed people saying that to me too. And I honestly, it just kind of makes me feel icky. It makes me feel like a little bit elitist. I love plenty of books. There are plenty of books I dislike too. And if I dislike it, I'm just not going to recommend it. But I'm not going to do this whole like author shaming anymore. I love simple writing. I think really good writing is simple at times too.
That's really great. That's actually making me think of, I was a huge fan of the Percy Jackson series when I was little, when I was growing up, and there's actually going to be a Disney Plus TV show. I'm so excited about it. But recently, like years after I'd like finished reading it, I went back and like, I wanted to like pick up the book and like see what it would be like. And I was shocked at how different the writing level was to how I remember it being. And it's because when you're a kid, and maybe it's because of the reading level I had then, but when I was a kid, I thought it was like the single greatest piece of like literature ever written in human history. Right. And that's because when you're a child, you don't have as many standards for things. You don't like, you know, poke at it. You don't criticize it. You take the joy that you can find in it. And that's one of the things I think we can all learn from children generally is like, can you just find what's nice about this, enjoy it, and then move on from that, which is like sort of what you're talking about, right? You don't have to dunk on something if there isn't something that you don't like about it. You can just take what's good and then move on. And that's one of the benefits of reading is you can get exposed to things, figure out what your relationship with it is, and then move on.
Yeah, I mean, totally agree. And that even just goes back to like, again, finding out what you like and do that thing. And if you don't like it, it's also okay to walk away from it. Nobody's gonna make you read.
Yeah. And that I think is a great transition into the thing that you've all been waiting for, teetering at the edge of your seats, which is our recommendation. So Beth, why don't you tell us, you know, your sort of like maybe 2 to 3 recommendations of books you've been thinking, because we wanted to give you guys some recommendations in different genres, maybe some stuff that may be a little bit out of the scope for what you might be considering yourselves. So take it away, Beth. What are you reading? And tell us more about why we should get into those books.
Totally. Yeah, I'll start with my fun one just because we've talked a little bit, touched on fantasy already a little bit. So that's been a recent newfound love for me, that fantasy is so fun. And very specifically, I love a Greek epic. So I love that you just brought up Percy Jackson too. I loved it when I was in high school. I kind of do want to go back and read it. I think it could be super fun. But a book that shot up to the top of like maybe my all-time favorites over the winter this past year in December, I read this book called The Song of Achilles by Madeline Miller. Fairly recent book written in 2011. It's about Achilles and a character that shows up in Homer's Iliad and the Odyssey. But it's kind of a remake into and a diving into the story of Achilles and his companion, Patroclus, and it follows their relationship, but it follows them through what was going on in the Iliad and like the stories of the Greek epics and the battles and so many of the common names we know, like Helen of Troy and Zeus is in there and Apollo's in there and all these really cool stories. But she just did a really beautiful job remastering what their relationship was. So it's a love story, but also an epic. And it just brought me through every wave of emotion. I don't want to spoil anything, but I cried real tears while reading this book. And I have recommended it to like everybody I've talked to since reading it. And one really cool thing that I will say about this book too, there's actually a reading comprehension passage. If anybody recalls this one, it's from one of the earlier tests, but it's about Greek epics. And it's about sort of the choice that characters make in Greek epics of, is it a choice of your own free will or is it by the will of the gods? And so
does it mention Agamemnon? Is that the one that you're talking about? Yeah.
So I had done that reading comp passage before and like, it was totally fine. I didn't have trouble with it. But I got to the story of Agamemnon loosing the winds and the sacrifice and the choice he had to make. And I like almost yelled. I was like, oh my God, this is the story. And this is how the choice works. And the choice is actually so much more important than, you know, I felt so much more emotion while reading a novel about it versus is what I felt when reading the reading comp passage. And not that you have to feel that when reading the reading comp passage, but I just thought it was a fun way that even made me want to go back, read the reading comp passage and see it in a new light and be like, oh, wow, I get this in a totally new way. And all the time when I'm reading on the LSAT, I'm making connections with my everyday life. And although Greek epics aren't my everyday life, that was a way that I could connect with that passage in a new way.
That's awesome. I kind of want to check out that book now. I feel like we're just doing like reading recommendations to each other, but I'm going to put that one on my list. And maybe I'll do my fantasy one too. Yes. And then like we can flip back to you for your other recommendations. So I'm reading a book right now. I actually like pulled it off my shelf. So it's called The Goblin Emperor by Catherine Addison. And it is, my partner actually bought this book for me. And it's sort of like a fantasy novel. It's a political intrigue novel about sort of the politics that go on in taking on a new role in society. Like, it's a character that probably wasn't ever going to get the kind of power that he gets, and then ascending to that role, and then like the complicated social, political, socioeconomical, and even like individual like drama that takes place when something that cataclysmic happens in a society. And it's a really wonderful story because, like, you know, I'm someone that like wants to go into public service. I'm someone that like is interested in maybe even going into politics. And it was so cool to see this story play out. And it's a really good book. I'm only about like halfway through it, but I highly recommend it. It's really well written. And it has this like element of, you're really in a new place. You've been like whisked off to this particular land, and it's got its own sort of system. It's got its own hierarchy. It's got its own prejudices. And it's really cool to like see it all unfold. And I love, and I also like, I'm thinking about this book a lot, like Dune, which I read last year, and it's quite similar to Dune in terms of a new culture, a new society. And it gave me the opportunity to be like, to be truly whisked away. And those are, I think, some of the best books, is like where you find yourself just vanishing.
Yes, exactly. You get to be in it, like feel so connected to the characters and the world.
It's like a meditative thing.
Is it a series?
I actually don't know if it is a series, but it's not labeled as like, you know, like a book one. I think it is like relatively standalone, but I think there are other books that have been written by the same author in like the same like land. I don't think, I'm not sure though, if this is a standalone book or if it's a series. I probably should have looked that up before this episode, but.
No worries. We can follow up, but that sounds great. I'll add that to my list too. Sometimes I love when a book like is a potential series, but they're like, you could end here if you're satisfied. And sometimes I do, just like, if it's a trilogy or something, it's like, okay, book one ends it. If I'm satisfied and I don't want the perfect world ending, like to be shattered, I'm going to end it there.
Yeah, exactly. And like, sometimes like I've like read books where I read the first book and I'm like, you know, it's okay if I don't read the rest of them. And then like a TV show or a movie comes out and I'm like, I'll just watch that. Like, that's fine. Right. And it's just making room for more realities.
Yeah, cool. Thanks for sharing.
Yeah.
I'll tell you about one of my nonfiction recommendations. Definitely a heavy book emotionally, but one of the most fantastic, beautifully written books I've ever read. Not necessarily with the goal of learning, but this book is a memoir. It's called The Perfect Other by Kylie Leddy, Leddy. It is a memoir of a woman whose sister disappeared for a time, and then they found out that she had passed away, but it was after her sister's battle with mental illness. So definitely be tender to yourself if that's something that does not sound like a topic that you want to dive into. Totally okay. Take care of yourself. It was a heavy read. It was a very beautiful story. She just did a really fantastic job of letting people into this really tender grief, honestly, and telling the story of mental illness. And she started this book out with basically like, I want to tell the story of what happens to a person who's suffering from schizophrenia, and other ways of psychosis, and what that did to her family, and what it did to her sister. And so she did it in this way that she was like, this is why I'm telling this story. These stories aren't told enough. A lot of people with these sort of mental illnesses are silently suffering. And because of that, she silently suffered for years. One other part that like was really hard, but also really beautiful about this book. I have an older sister. My older sister, we're very close. So it was hard for me to read a totally different story of sisters and like imagine myself in that story. But it really helped me empathize with it. And then another part of why I loved this book is that right now I work in healthcare policy for folks with disabilities who are on Medicaid in my state. And before this, I worked in social work, and I had a caseload full of people with a bunch of different disabilities. So I see such tangible value of these stories being told and not just known by healthcare providers, or anything like that, or, you know, attorneys representing people or anything like that, because unfortunately I did see people with disabilities encounter the justice system for maybe not great reasons. So would definitely recommend that book. It's heavy, but it was really beautiful. And she just does a really great job also balancing and being aware of her own privilege. She's a white woman from Massachusetts, and she told her story as like, I know that I'm telling this from a very privileged standpoint, and other people experience this very differently. So it was just a very beautiful book, if you want to feel that and empathize in a new way.
That's awesome. I think particularly students that are pursuing careers in public interest work or in public service work, which lots and lots of you guys are, as future lawyers, I encourage you to pick up books like the ones that Beth is talking about. I try to do that myself too. One of my recommendations definitely falls into that bucket as well. The reason why is you're essentially exercising the ability to compartmentalize and to not become overwhelmed by the inevitable compassion fatigue and even secondhand PTSD that comes from working in vulnerable communities. I've experienced it myself. With working with vulnerable communities, there are instances where things like that happen, and you have to be able to, you know, do your job and find ways to build community and do the work you're doing, but also to connect back into your own life and remember that like you're responsible for yourself and all the links that come with that. And a book can be, again, a more low stakes place to practice some of those skills and to see what it is that you're actually getting into, right? You may find that as you read some of these stories that it is too much for you. It is too overwhelming for you. And it's a way to test out, you know, maybe you're going to work in public service, but you're not going to be on the front lines. Or you maybe enjoy the empathy that comes from these stories so much that you would not work anywhere else but the front lines, right? All of this nuance is impossible to find without exposing yourself to these stories.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, well said. What about you? Do you have another one?
Yeah, so I was thinking about The Cast by Isabel Wilkerson. So that, I believe, is a Pulitzer Prize winning book. So that is one of the ones that I made room for by trying to read other things. But I was pointed to this book by actually, I think it was maybe even the president of the Cleveland Foundation. We actually met him for an event when I was a service fellow in Cleveland. And he told us that that's a book that we should all read. And I picked it up because of my own personal associations with some of the stories in Cast. And I started reading, and it's essentially it's a story, and it's a narrative about the similarities between Nazi Germany, the caste system in India, and the history of slavery in the United States and the institution of oppression that exists in this country. And she essentially draws all of these parallels through these three societies to build a kind of argument for what oppression does to a community or for what oppression does to a group of people throughout history. And it has fundamentally changed the way I look at the world. And I would not be thinking about problems the same way. I wouldn't be thinking about myself and my own personal experiences, my own family history, the same way. There's so many things that I have absolutely changed because of that book. And I highly recommend it. I think it's one of those books that can take a long time to read because it was really heavy for me to get through. So similar sort of disclaimer that Beth was giving, like it is a lot to take in. But I think it's one of those stories that it's the story of America. It's the story of India. It's the story of a lot of different places where there is a caste system, where we are seeing these realities. And again, this tied in so heavily with my desire to become a lawyer and like why I teach the LSAT and like why I do this at all. And why Beth's one of like my closest friends now, because we've like found this like sense of community in this work. And it's like taught me how to think about my own career, how to think about why I'm trying to make the changes I'm making. And it just gave me the opportunity to think about things differently. And I just would not have done that if it wasn't for that book.
Wow. I mean, well said. Ola and I talked about this book cast a little while back, and I had it on hold at the library for like 14, 16 weeks because they were so unavailable. How well wanted this book is. And just yesterday it became available on audiobook. So I can't wait to start it and to talk with you about it. And I'm really looking forward to hearing it on audiobook too, because of what you've told me and what you just shared about too. I'm really looking forward to being able to pause and think about it and maybe even go back and listen if there are things I wasn't grasping fully. Is it a book that you've gone back to at all to read more of?
Yeah, and I think rereading books is one of those places where I find a lot of joy too, and a lot of meaning, because I think we grow between reads of books. I feel like I grow between like rewatches of certain TV shows. One of my favorite TV shows is Newsroom. It's an Aaron Sorkin TV show. It's a very short one. It's on HBO or something like that. And it's about like journalism and how journalism is in the United States. It's got its problems, but it's also got a lot that I enjoy from it. And every time I go back to it, I learn something new, or I've changed. And so my approach now has like different aspects to it. And it's absolutely a book I've gone back to. It's almost like become sort of a guiding principle in terms of what is underlying this major like problem we're trying to fix. Well, it's the thing that's underlying most institutions in the United States.
Yep, exactly. yikes.
Yeah. Well, that's our podcast. We'll see you next time.
I actually do have another question about caste, though, because a lot of times, like when reading something heavy like that, and it's okay if the answer is no, obviously you didn't write it, but does it give hope? Are there tangible? Yes. Okay. Cool.
It does.
Sometimes it's really hard for me to read a book that exposes something basically broken about the world. And I am a very it's just as like a survival tactic. I just have to be pretty rooted in hope. And I love when a book gives something tangible of, yeah.
Yeah. And I think it comes in lots of different forms in the book too. It like, it gives you aspects that you may not have considered have hope in them. It's almost like forced me to like find the hope in it simply because of the way she tells the story. Like it's filled with anecdotes and it's filled with sort of, it's almost an argument. It's really like a very, very long form argument for why this is the fundamental thing that we're all grappling with, which is why it's so fascinating to me as someone that's going into public service as an immigrant from India, comparing it to something like Nazi Germany and seeing that dichotomy, or like three layers of societies, and seeing the similarities. I do think there's hope in it, but it's not to the extent of, you know, like underplaying the emotions that, you know, she has to convey. But I do think there's hope in it. It's just hopeful to me, as maybe this is a meta comment, it's just hopeful to me that that story is being told at all.
I agree. Yeah. I mean, and that's what I love about stories, and whether a story is, I mean, even what I love about stories that get told in TV shows or in movies too. One of the things I love about stories is the way it just represents people.
Yeah.
Or they can represent people. Yeah.
So this was a sort of fun idea that we came up together. We wanted to make space to talk about these recommendations and to talk about what reading can give you as an individual, as someone that's studying for the LSAT, and as someone that wants to become a lawyer. So we hope this gave you a glimpse into the ways that we spend time outside the LSAT that'll make your life better. Lawyers are readers. And while you should be working on actual LSAT questions to improve on the LSAT, it can't be your full-time job. We recognize that. And so we wanted to make some space for that. So take your time outside to find some joy in reading. Thank you so much for listening. And leave us a comment if you want us to do this again. We'd love to come back with other recommendations, but we appreciate you listening. Please email daily@lsatdemon.com if you'd like to ask us a question or share some LSAT or law school admissions news. Thank you so much for listening.